From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made last Friday in a park in New York City, and also in 45 BC, in the ancient Roman Senate, when Julius Caesar is stabbed to death by a mob of conspirators. While Shakespeare's play has been performed innumerable times throughout history, the recent production in Central Park has caused some uproar. Maybe you've heard that the title character in the Public Theater's company's version is styled after President Donald Trump. While there's no mistaking the choice, the actor wears a blonde wig, a suit, and a long, bright red tie. And if you know the play, you know that Caesar is assassinated. So when the Trump-esque character is stabbed, right-wing supporters took issue. One woman stormed the stage and protested what she said was the normalization of political violence against the right. Fox News used the headline, "New York City Play Appears to Depict Assassination of Trump," while declining to mention that the play is, after all, Julius Caesar. Major sponsors of the production dropped their funding commitments, and there's been a slew of criticism on social media. But Shakespeare scholars, teachers, and people who have actually read the play say the protesters are missing the point. Shakespeare's work is a statement about the dangers of political violence and mob rule. So is it a missed opportunity for the right? And how many people know what the play is truly about? This hour, we're discussing the play, the role of the theater, and how the Bard is taught in schools today. And I'd like to welcome my guests. We have a full studio, all Shakespeare experts. Diana Louise Carter is a producer for the Walbird Theater Company's summer production of Macbeth. She's also the publicist for the Rochester Shakespeare Players summer production of As You Like It. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for inviting me.
Evie Fanning is a local high school English teacher and one of the leading voices we turn to whenever we have conversations about literature on the program. Welcome back, Evie.
Thanks for having me back.
Jacob Baller is a senior at Webster Thomas High School. And Jacob, you did your final AP English project on Julius Caesar, correct?
Yes, that's true.
Congratulations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Sheila Byrne is an advanced placement English teacher at Webster Thomas High School, Jacob's teacher. And she also prepares students for the Rochester Shakespeare Competition. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, listeners, I invite you to join the conversation. I know there's a lot of dialogue on Twitter about this right now. And if you would like to share your questions or comments, you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. So before we talk about the actual play, let's talk about the protest. I don't know if any of you saw the video or listeners, if you saw the video on Twitter, but we have a clip, an audio clip of that protest. And in this clip, you'll hear one of the protesters, Laura Loomer, a self-described white right-wing conservative investigative journalist and activist, storm the stage. And then you'll hear a second protester who's standing in the audience. Let's listen.
Liberty. Freedom.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause. We're going to pause. Security. Security, please.
You are all Goebbels! You are all Nazis like Joseph Goebbels! This is Goebbels! You are all Goebbels! You are inciting terrorists! The blood of these police is on your hands!
So that was from last Friday in New York City. And I'd just like to go around the table and ask you all what your first reactions to that protest was. Evie, we'll start with you.
I always find it concerning when people want to censor any sort of art. I think that's a dangerous road to go down. And especially if it's a censorship or a protest that has to do with the content, and especially if it's because that content is political, I think it's really important to be able to speak our minds, whatever direction those minds may lean.
Mm-hmm. Diana, I know that's something that you were mentioning too before the hour began.
Yeah, I think we're going to look back at this era and call it the age of rage, because people don't need to even understand an idea before they decide they're offended by it. And their reaction, and this case is proof of that, is their attempt to shut down what that other opinion is, whether they agree with it or not agree with it or even understand it. The result of what she did was a huge amount of free publicity for this production. And as I understand it, more donations are coming into that theater to help offset what they lost from the donors who pulled out. But at the same time, it also fed the rage machine that is kind of our society these days. there have been death threats and calls of protest to Shakespeare companies around the country because people are just protesting what they don't understand. They don't understand that this performance happened for a limited number of weeks in New York City, and they're just taking off after it. Mm-hmm. I want to mention, too, I attended Central Park Shakespeare last year, and Trump was also part of the production that I saw. It was Taming of the Shrew, and that's a play within a play, and they dispensed with the outer play and presented it as a beauty pageant instead, and the voice announcing it was Donald Trump's voice. I don't know if it was his voice actually or an impersonator, but he was part of that, and no one protested him being on the stage then. So I think it's just a common thing for Shakespeare to be relevant, to bring it up to modern standards, to bring something people can relate to, and he is, of course, a New York City celebrity, so he was a natural.
Well, I think it's also important to mention that in 2012, there was a production of Julius Caesar, and the title character was styled after Obama, and there was no real pushback about that, no protesting. Delta was also a sponsor of that play. I think it was in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. They did not pull out. They continued to support the play. And there have been other productions where Hillary Clinton has been styled as the Caesar character. The Caesar character has been styled as Hillary Clinton and other political leaders. So this is the first time that we're really seeing this kind of uproar. Sheila, how did you react when you first heard about this protest?
I saw the clip from the people who were there at the play. And one of the things that I read afterwards was that there was a lot of confusion because part of that production involved having people wearing black shirts in the audience, and they were supposed to represent the mob. So some of the audience was kind of confused. They thought this was part of the play at first, and so they didn't understand that it was a protest. And then obviously you can hear the booing, and then they're stopping the play. But the other thing that kind of struck me was that by focusing on that one act, the death of Caesar, they miss the bigger point of the play, which is after they kill Caesar, the Republic falls apart. And so it wasn't a good thing. And I don't think that the company was trying to show that the president should be assassinated by any means. I think they were trying to produce a version of Julius Caesar that shows how a country can fall apart. Mm-hmm.
Jacob, is that something that you focused on in your project, the political message of the play and the dangers of using violence to promote democracy?
Well, our final project was more of a comedic reenactment, I guess you could say.
Oh, okay.
But we definitely got the main points of the play in there, and how that ties into these protests is it's kind of sad to see these huge overall themes and motives of this play to go completely unseen because these people are so riled up on this one plot of Caesar being killed. And yes, that happens, but like Miss Byrne has said, there's so much more that happens afterwards and beforehand that really kind of puts the assassination of Caesar into a bigger picture, and it's really unfortunate to see that so brushed over.
Do you think people are missing the point because they haven't actually read the play and they're relying on headlines like that Fox News headline that just says play about the assassination of Trump? Or do you think people don't care? They've read the play. They just don't care what it's really about. They're using it as a way to further their own potential motives.
I think if people had read the play, they would see that a comparison to Julius Caesar is actually quite complimentary. I don't know that it's a perfect parallel between Julius Caesar and Donald Trump. Julius Caesar certainly is confident and maybe arrogant and power hungry and ambitious, but he's also experienced and rational, and people love him, and people support him. And when the play opens, we see all of Rome in support of Julius Caesar. So I think most definitely people haven't read the play if they're offended by it. And it's just kind of histrionic. It's easy to jump on a bandwagon of, here's an image of violence that we don't like. Here's an image of violence against somebody that we support. But an image of violence is not the same as a denouncement. And this play is about so much more than politics either. Yes, it suggests that political assassination could cause chaos, But it's also about many psychological things, about relationships, about what power does to people, about what people do to each other. It raises so many great questions that we should be asking ourselves, especially in the current atmosphere that we find ourselves in, I think.
I think it's very rare for people to have read this play. I'm someone who sees between a dozen and 20 Shakespeare performances every year, and I've never seen a production of Julius Caesar. With today's current educational reform movements, there's less and less Shakespeare in the schools. So if you did like I did, between 7th and 12th grade, read one complete play a year, that still wouldn't let you necessarily cover Julius Caesar. But many schools are not doing a play a year, or they're doing just little segments. Or I have two kids in this about to graduate from the city school district. I don't believe either one of them has read Julius Caesar, and one of them read the same play twice. So there's less and less familiarity with Shakespeare's works.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that you say that, because in our school district, Julius Caesar is normally read around the 10th grade, but no one had been reading it for years, and so I thought this was like an opportunity to introduce a new audience. So Jacob's class was my guinea pig, and they really enjoyed it. They really enjoyed reading. It was the first thing that we read when school started. So it was kind of an opportunity for them to see what Shakespeare can be. And one of the things that I really think is getting left out of the whole conversation about this is, I mean, the larger conversation with the media, is that Caesar isn't even the hero of this play. It's not his name is on the play, and yes, he does get killed, but this is about Brutus, and this is about his desire to do the best thing for his country, even if it means killing the person who's in power that has been good to him. So it's about kind of moral crisis and persuasion.
I think this is a good opportunity for me to put Jacob on the spot. And for those listeners who may not have read the play, maybe they weren't exposed to it in high school, Jacob, if you can summarize just the main points in maybe 2 minutes, let us know what we're missing.
All right. So Shakespeare writes this with, it begins with Julius Caesar coming back from his conquest in Pompey. And people of Rome are on their knees for him. They love him. He just came back from this great conquest. And this is leaving his fellow senators like Brutus and Cassius and Mark Antony, who are afraid that he's becoming too much, he's gaining too much power, and they don't want him to become a king of Rome and ruin the Republic itself. So this begins the whole conspiring against him and kind of twisting of arms and manipulation to get everyone on board, like Brutus, who loves Caesar and loves the Republic, but when he's falsely believed to think that Caesar wants to ruin the Republic for himself, for his own personal gains, that's what turns him against him. And inevitably, there's the assassination of Caesar. And then he tries to convince the people of Rome that this was better for them. He was becoming too powerful, too much of a monarch. So he had to go for the glory of Rome. But then Mark Antony comes up and he's like, Brutus is an honorable man, but what he's telling you isn't true, because Caesar loved his people and was going to give them wealth, land, all these promises. And this kind of turns this mob crowd of Rome, who was on Brutus's side initially, but then turned around when Antony comes up. It just kind of becomes hysterical. They're mad. They're upset that they would kill him. Why would they kill their beloved ruler? And so it just kind of, Rome falls into chaos, and Brutus and Cassius are kind of forced into exile, and Caesar's adopted son, Augustus, comes back into Rome, and he's like, listen, we need to get this back how it is. So armies are formed, war breaks out, and eventually Brutus and Cassius, due to some misinformation, which is kind of tied into the whole irony of the situation, misinformation of protesters, of everybody. They're killed, and then it's all about how Rome can get back on its feet.
Mm-hmm. Your teacher looks very proud of you.
I think I should go back in and give him a couple extra points on his final average.
There you go. So in Pulitzer Prize winner Tony Kushner has said, it's an upsetting play. And if there's a production of Julius Caesar that doesn't upset you, you're sitting through a very bad production. So the point here, and that you've just made, is, and I'll let you all jump in, is you're supposed to walk away asking yourself questions and thinking about what makes a good political leader, what happens when a leader's power is unchecked, and then back to those relationships with Brutus. If you were to say there's one big missed opportunity here for people who are protesting, what would you say that is?
What are they missing from the play, do you mean?
Sure. Instead of demonizing people who have produced this play, or Shakespeare for that matter.
Yeah. It actually, I think one of my favorite things about Shakespeare and about Julius Caesar in general, or specifically, is that it shows us the complexity of any individual. It shows us that a person is not one-dimensional. So if the play is about Brutus, we see Brutus conflicted between being a loyal friend, but also a patriotic citizen, and also somebody who has a will to power, but also somebody who tries to be honorable. And so it's really about how difficult it is to make a decision, and how in some cases there isn't a simple right choice. It's not all as easy as this play is good and this play is bad. We should put this one on and we should protest that one and we should shut this one down. You know, it's the whole point is we need to keep an open mind. We need to listen to opinions. We need to look into ourselves and others and understand that things are not easy and things aren't simple.
I'm seeing the phone starting to ring. We'll get to your calls in just a minute. So Peter, hang on the line for us. But I just want to ask a question about interpretation. So here's a play that's been performed innumerable times. Does it lend itself to different interpretations? Should it? Because we're seeing a lot of the same rhetoric about what people should think. But if I were to present you with a list of lyrics for a song, maybe I interpret them one way. Maybe I think it's about a relationship ending. Maybe you interpret them a different way. It's about a death of a family member. Does this fall in that same category?
I think it does. I think, you know, this is a play written 418 years ago in England. So how do modern American audiences relate to it? One sort of entry point is to show them an image that they're familiar with, a topic that we're all discussing. We're all discussing the nature of power and justice and mob rule and protest. So this is a way for them to be into the play. And if you protest this at the moment that or before the moment that Caesar is actually assassinated, you don't get the rest of it, which is talking about what happens to our society if we allow mob rule to happen. I think this is a common way for these plays to be brought to modern audiences. And if you want that chance here in Rochester, you'll get to see Macbeth this summer done in a post-apocalyptic way, sort of a Mad Max style, if you will, and that's at the Lyric Theater. And then you can also see As You Like It done in a 1960s style, starting from the Mad Men era and moving to the Woodstock era. And these are touchstones that Americans can relate to, and then they can really hear the words and the power that Shakespeare still has after all these years. I think it helps audiences sort of get over that initial reluctance to deal with Elizabethan English, iambic pentameter, all the things that make people run away from Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. Peter's been waiting on the line. This is Peter in Rochester. Hi, Peter.
Hi, yeah, and I'm Pete Scribner. I'm the president of the Rochester Community Players, founder of our Shakespeare Players program, and I directed a production of Julius Caesar in 2013 here in town at Muck Theater. I want to thank Jacob for doing a very nice job and kind of repeating the story of the theater. There's a bit of a structural challenge with the play. It is so compelling, running up through the assassination scene and the funeral orations afterwards, and Mark Antony's, you know, brilliant manipulation of the crowd and his rhetorical flourishes, that acts 4 and 5 are sometimes kind of, you know, not looked at as closely, like the audience kind of checks out, paying attention if they're not done well, because those are the scenes where everything goes to heck. One small scene Jacob didn't mention was right after the funeral. A mob lynches a pedestrian, a bystander, who has the same name as one of the conspirators, but the mob is so bloodthirsty that they're no thinking. That's a very visceral example of what you're talking about. In general, Shakespeare's political philosophy through all of his plays, he was a champion of stability, and was a relatively conservative guy. I think you would say that in Richard II, he depicts a bad king being overthrown by a logical modern rival, but all that results in is seven more plays of carnage and civil war and revolution, until finally, in Richard III, the bad king is, the successor is overthrown. Or next fall, we're planning to do Coriolanus, which is another classic Roman play, again talking about the chaos that happens from mob rule, passions, political manipulations, behind-the-scenes dealings. Shakespeare just really preferred a stable society, even if it wasn't necessarily a perfectly democratic society. I'd also like to say that I think a major American president would be a likely subject to the Julius Caesar treatment. As you mentioned, there was a production about Barack Obama. I could see productions Clinton, Reagan, Kennedy, Johnson, all these huge outside personalities lend themselves to the Julius Caesar treatment.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing I wanted to point out was back in 1864, there was a production of Julius Caesar in which the three Booth brothers were the three leading actors. Junius Brutus Booth Jr. was Caesar, the great Edwin Booth was Brutus, and John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln, played Mark Antony.
And I think after the murder, Peter, John Wilkes Booth said, he was complaining that he was being hunted for, quote, for doing what Brutus was honored for. So there's an example of someone interpreting the play in a very different way.
Yeah.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks so much. Where can we find you online?
RochesterCommunityPlayers.org, or, Google Shakespeare Rochester will pop up.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. For those of you who have performed in or seen local productions here on the panel, has there been one locally that has a contemporary take that you walked away from thinking, wow, that really made me think?
I think part of the beauty of Shakespeare is that you don't really need to modernize it in order to make you think. It is timeless. It is, I mean, the conflicts that Cassius and Brutus and Caesar and all of them struggle with are the same ones that all of us struggle with still. And sometimes I think students and kids see the obstacles in unfamiliar language or vocabulary. But the message, the ideas, the characters that Shakespeare shows us really don't need updating. They are still true.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to play devil's advocate and ask a question about the graphic nature of this particular production that was in Central Park. Some people are saying because it was so graphic, so violent, blood on the stage, it crossed the line. How do you feel about that? Is it the role of theater to cross those lines? Or if it involves some political leader or president, is that too much?
Well, it's not that this particular production did it. The play calls for the murderers of Caesar to wash their hands in his blood. It's a very violent scene. So do you think it's more violent because they suggested that Caesar was our actual president? I don't know. Some of Shakespeare is very violent. If there's a political message that you're not enjoying in this, the one thing that I think this protester missed is that the best thing you can do is don't buy a ticket, don't attend it. And therefore, that will maybe relegate this play to anonymity instead of this big scene. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, public art is how we have public discussions. I think it's really important to work this out publicly, but in a civil way.
Mm-hmm. One of the reviews that I read, I think it might have been in the New Yorker, they said that up to the point where Caesar was assassinated, the actor playing Caesar was kind of being played in a comedic way, like over the top with the hair and the tie and the Slavic wife. And So it was kind of over the top. But after the assassination scene, it was very, they said that the crowd immediately became very somber and hushed. And so that's the effect that I think the director was going for, is to show how awful this is. So I think mission accomplished, that that director got that point across, that it's not just rhetoric. When the rhetoric turns into something that looks awful, then you can visualize what his point was.
We're talking about the play Julius Caesar and some recent protests that happened during a production in Central Park in New York City last week. And we're taking your calls. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm also on Twitter at mmacmedia. And you can also email the program at connections@wxxi.org. I think I find myself in the category that you mentioned, Diana, where in high school we read one play at every grade level. I remember very little. I apologize to all my old teachers. But I'd like to talk about how these plays are being taught in schools. And there are some teachers out in the West Coast who say that they don't want to teach Shakespeare at all anymore for a number of reasons. So we'll tackle those issues in our second hour. Again, listeners, feel free to join this conversation. We'll be right back with more Connections. Coming up in our second hour, when we talk about poverty, how often do we talk about the context of one person's story, especially when it comes to students? Students living in poverty deal with toxic stress and the potential of engaging in at-risk behaviors at a higher rate than their more affluent peers. In the last 3 years, a local mentoring program has seen remarkable progress in helping these students. We're talking about the Champion Academy next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about the play Julius Caesar and some recent protests that happened during a production in New York City where the title character was styled as President Donald Trump. And we're talking about what the play really means. We're finding that a lot of people either haven't read it in school or it's been a long time, and they may be missing the political messages, the political undertones or overtones of the play. And during the break, Jacob was just talking about how challenging it can be to read Elizabethan language and how that may be a barrier to some students in school. So let's talk a little bit about that. When you were first, what was your first play that you read in high school, Shakespeare play?
Oh, geez. I think the first Shakespeare play was Romeo and Juliet back in 9th or 10th grade English. But that, it's a really good play for the kind of introduction to Shakespeare, see how he works. And yeah, it's a love story, but there's so much more to it, and it has its more graphic moments. But this whole kind of reluctance to teach Shakespeare in high schools is, I think, really unfortunate, because yes, reading Old English texts is very challenging sometimes, and a lot of high school students, some of my classmates included, are like, I don't want to read this. This is way too difficult to interpret. But if you really wrap your mind around it and dig into it, there's so much analysis that you can talk about and go over. And it's amazing to see how much of it is still relevant to how much it's still relevant to issues of today, which we're seeing right now with this New York City version.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, which plays are you teaching? What grades do you teach?
I teach 11th and 12th grade, mm-hmm. and I teach Advanced Placement English in both grades. So traditionally, we teach Macbeth and Hamlet, and we teach them kind of as a pair and then analyze them, or King Lear. And so King Lear, I think, is also another good play that could connect even more poignantly to some of the things that are going on behind the scenes that we hear about just in little trickles. One of the problems is that when kids hear Shakespeare, they automatically they're starting to like tune out. They're getting out their phones. So it's kind of challenging to keep it interesting for students. So that's why I go to garage sales and buy white sheets and make them wear togas when they're explaining what's going on in the play. So that the togas are always fun, and you just have to kind of make it a little more accessible. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teachers that have started in our school that have started to teach the comedies again, because they want the kids to see that Shakespeare could be really funny. So they are kind of going in that direction. There's more interest in Shakespeare now in my colleagues. And I will say that one of my students is actually going to be in the Macbeth play. So there's a real strong connection there. And we do try to get students to participate in the National Shakespeare Competition, where they read a passage and a sonnet and perform that. And so this year we had one student go to the final. She ended up coming in second, and she was really, really, she was very passionate about what she read. But I think kids miss that passionate part of Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it is because with limited resources, teachers often have the students just read it, the language, which can be hard the first time. These plays were not written to be read. They were written to be performed. And I have to say my love of Shakespeare started 3 years after I read my first play, because it was when I saw my first Shakespeare play. So hated Much Ado About Nothing in seventh grade because of the language. It's now one of my favorite plays because it's so, so clever. But it wasn't until I was taken with my class to Stratford in Canada to see Merchant of Venice that it just became alive for me. So if you can do that, some teachers are able to bring in films and you can see it in the classroom that way. If you can do a field trip, that would be wonderful, but I know those kind of resources are very limited. An exercise that one of my kids' schools did was to have the children form groups and rewrite scenes from Romeo and Juliet in modern language. And so the great scene where Romeo ends up killing Tybalt became a comedy somehow, but they got it because they had to understand the language to rewrite the language, mm-hmm. and that became a really great learning tool.
Mm-hmm. Evie, which plays are you teaching?
So I do 9th, 10th, and 12th grade, and therefore I can choose whatever I want.
Oh, that's nice. So,
of course, we all start with Romeo and Juliet in 9th grade, which can be boring and standard, and we all know the story already, and Shakespeare gives away the end in the first 12 lines. So, but every time I teach that play, I kind of worry about the parents calling and complaining because there's so much sex and there's so much death, and it's so provocative, and Juliet is such a, you told me to press the button if I'm going to swear.
She
totally takes that play and makes it her own. She's the one who comes on to Romeo. She's the one who proposes to him. She's really like the driving force, this 13-year-old girl. And I feel like that's not something that comes to mind immediately when we think of Romeo and Juliet. I think people think of iambic pentameter and the word Shakespeare, and they forget that it's really exciting stuff. Like, there's a lot going on there that that we would love to read about. Some of the books that are bestsellers that our kids are reading over the summer, I was just rereading Julius Caesar, and I realized that this book that a bunch of my kids read over the summer, the title comes from one of the lines in Julius Caesar about the fault in our stars, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So he says it's in ourselves, and I don't remember the rest of it. But anyway, so it's totally relevant. And then in 10th grade, I do Othello usually, which is also so cool, like the most evil character of all time. He's so evil. You don't even know why he's doing the evil things he's doing. Like, he's not even trying to gain anything. You know, Cassius is kind of manipulative and mean, but at least he wants power. We get that. Iago just wants to destroy Othello, and he's not even going to gain anything from it. So it's so interesting, you know, to kind of delve into the psychology, the sociology, the relationships, maybe the romance of what's going on there. And then in 12th grade, I get to do the holy grail of all of literature, Hamlet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to start because we'll need many hours. But Hamlet, I think maybe is the greatest thing that's ever been written. And every year that I read it, I'm amazed by it. And I think maybe foolishly and arrogantly that my students love it also. Like, they see themselves in some of these characters. They see their struggles in a lot of the conflicts that they face. Like, how many people are honestly dealing with to be or not to be? You know, we do, and we can't talk about it. And Hamlet can, and we kind of can through him. So it's, I find Shakespeare immensely relevant and necessary. And it's not a necessary evil. Like, it's a necessary good. It's kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, Virginia in Rochester has a point directly related to that. We'll let her jump in. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for calling.
Well, First of all, I'm going to detour just a minute to say thank you to those who are teaching on this panel, because here, you know, the whole thing of like jumping up on togas and all of that. These are meant to be, I'm the director of the Walbert production of Macbeth, and it shows, because I can tell when someone has had that experience with Shakespeare, where it is not just lived on the page, but lived in the body, because it was meant to. And that's such a big thing, and I think that's such a big part of reactivating these texts. So kudos to the people on your panel who are making that point to take the extra step to make these things live for their students. It really makes a difference. In regards to the Julius Caesar show, the one thing that keeps striking me, and something, you know, in all of this controversy and all of this the political division, all this stuff, the thing that is most amazing to me and what I try to take from this is, isn't it amazing that a production written over 400 years ago sparks such a passion today as if it was written for this time? And I think that's some of the power of this writing, is that it was written for another country in another time period with another political system in another environment. And here we are, hundreds of years later, still finding it so poignant. Mm-hmm.
Great point. Thank you so much, Virginia. Anyone want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I wanted to just mention that, you know, we think of these stories as being 400 years old. And one reason I keep seeing Shakespeare time and time again each year is because I am connecting with these older traditions and also seeing what's new that we can add to it now. But in the case of Julius Caesar, it's a story even older than 400 years. Shakespeare did a lot of rewriting. He used other artists' works and historical works and refashioned them to create his plays. And so he was relying on the works of Plutarch, which I think were written in the first century AD. So these are very good, well-told stories, and that's why they keep resonating today.
Mm-hmm. Well, even in the play, it says, how many ages hence shall our lofty scenes be acted over in states unborn and accents yet unknown? So I think Shakespeare even realized that this is like, well, tale as old as time, but not quite the same as Beauty and the Beast. But the other thing that I keep remembering, one of my colleagues told me yesterday that when she first started teaching, and she was teaching Julius Caesar to 10th graders, and they were talking about the appearance of Caesar's ghost. And she said, so why is there a ghost? Why is Brutus seeing a ghost? And a boy in the back row said, it's not a ghost, it's his conscience. Mm. So, and that's a theme in Hamlet as well, is the idea of the ghosts. Are the ghosts real, or are they just like some emotional reaction, or is it their conscience? So it kind of connects with, I guess, the idea of if you've done something wrong and you know you've done something wrong, which is kind of a good thing to connect to with literature anyways.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the play Julius Caesar, what it means today, and how it's still relevant with Diana Louise Carter, Evie Fanning, Jacob Baller, and Sheila Byrne. The phones are still ringing. Up next is Mike in Irondequoit. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Interesting conversation. Of course, it always is an interesting conversation. I can remember hearing a long time ago that Shakespeare is not to be read, it's to be spoken. And that was driven home to me when I was in college. My roommate was blind. He got his books from the Library of Congress, the Books for the Blind program. He had Richard Burton reading Hamlet. And, you know, it is impossible to study in a room where that's playing. I mean, the voice is just, it just pulls you out of anything else you're doing. Whether you like Shakespeare or not, it's impossible not to listen to it. And perhaps one of the possibilities of teaching Shakespeare is to have one of these readings, because it's amazing how quickly you get over the British isms. They just seem to disappear. So that's my two cents worth. Thanks a lot.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Mike. Thank you so much. That reminds me of, I listened to a book on tape a while back when I was driving to and from a class I was taking. It was on the road, and I usually finish books all the way through, audio tapes all the way through, but the person who was reading it, I will not name names, it was a celebrity, made it impossible to listen to. So, Mike, I think you make a great point. Whoever it is that's reading has to be compelling, someone that can draw you in and not drive you crazy for hours. But are you showing videos in your classrooms, Sheila and Abby?
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I found out when I first started, when we first started teaching Hamlet, was if I showed the video with the subtitles on, then they could see how the language worked with the actions. So it was kind of like they could read the dialogue and they could see the action at the same time. So I always do a year-end survey, and they said that really helped them to understand Hamlet, at least. It doesn't work with every play, but I would agree Hamlet is probably like the best piece of literature that anybody could ever teach, just because you can apply it in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the movies are key, I think.
Yeah, we resort to, I think, all the tools that we have. So we listen to the readings and we watch the movies and we reenact parts of it and we read parts of it. But I think the last caller made a really great point about you can't help but be hooked by it. Like once you get into it, whatever medium you have that's delivering it to you, Shakespeare's stories are ones that you just have to pay attention to. Mm-hmm.
Up next on the phones is Al in Irondequoit. Oh, no, Al in Churchville. Hi, Al. Sorry about that.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I read Julius Caesar in high school over 50 years ago, and it led to a lifelong interest in ancient Roman history. As far as the New York production goes, I think it is an obvious put-down of Donald Trump and his administration, and I believe it's well-deserved. I would have no problem in watching the play, and actually I've seen segments of it on YouTube, and I think all the uproar is absurd, and it's too bad it's come to this.
Al, stay on the line for a moment. When you say that, I'm looking at the note that was sent through. You think it was more of a comedy than anything. So are you saying that the way that the Trump-esque character was portrayed, how they hammed it up, what exactly do you mean by that?
I mean it was, I believe it was an actual put-down of Donald Trump, and I believe it was well-deserved pretty much by the personality that he has and the way that he campaigned.
So you're saying the artistic choice that was made you think was intentional?
Oh,
was
very much so. Mm-hmm.
I'll open that up to the panel. Thanks, Al. That gives us a lot to think about. I'll open that up to the panel.
I think it's a good thing that there are no Caesar supporters anymore, because they actually would have a reason to protest. Mm-hmm. How offensive to Caesar.
Disparaging the character by at least some would say.
At least one critic of the performance, and I'm talking about a newspaper critic, not mm-hmm. just a person throwing stones at this play, but said that they just didn't think that that was a great choice, that it was too easy. Hmm. And then you're kind of left with the rest of the play, like, what is this saying? You know, because it really does go into Roman history. So I don't know. I just think whatever choice you make, it's interesting to see what people do and how they carry it out. And I love seeing all these new modern takes on stuff. And I also like the more straightforward ones, too.
They made a lot of choices that make me think that it was a really thoughtful interpretation. I haven't seen the play, but I've spoken to one person who has. And I understand Antony is actually a woman in this play, right? And it never would have occurred to me, but when I heard that raised some interesting questions. So I think that they, you know, obviously made some changes and committed to some interpretations, but they are thoughtful. They are interesting. They're not just, you know, slapstick sort of blatant put downs.
Mm-hmm. Very good. We're taking more of your calls, but we've got to keep it tight, everyone. We're coming down to the last few minutes. Up next is John and Henrietta. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What this protest brings up for me is something that one of my professors in undergraduate studies referred to as rigid thinking, this whole zero sum. There's only one right way to do things, think things, say things, and if you're not, and everybody gets to decide, but then everybody else is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I see that as very sad, and I see it seems to me that there seems to be more and more of this, unfortunately. And it takes almost less than a pinprick to cause certain people to go ballistic because they don't agree. And it's, you know, black and white. And it's too bad to see this. It's sad to know that there are Shakespeare companies who are being threatened. This reminds me of 1978 when Jim Jones took a bunch of people down to Central America and then they all, committed suicide or were murdered. And there were several Jim Jones in the United States who got death threats. Now, this is the sad result, I think, of rigid thinking. I mean, the Jim Jones that killed all these people is dead. Why are you threatening these other Jim Jones? I mean, that's what happens with rigid thinking, in my estimation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John. Thanks for your call. Any reactions from the teachers in the room?
He's absolutely right. And that's exactly what the play is about. Mm-hmm. Well, the play is about many things, of course. But most profoundly, it is about the dangers of thinking one-dimensionally, of mm-hmm. just seeing one side and not the other, of misinterpreting and missing the complexity, of misreading people. And the chaos that's going to lead to. And so that's, I mean, inadvertently, the protesters are kind of presenting that very point.
Right. Up next on the phones, Anne and Perry. Anne, we're down to our last couple of minutes, so keep it tight, please.
I'll keep it short. I'm going to start with a little boast. My uncle, Grosvenor Glenn, played Cassius in what I believe or read was the first filmed version of Julius Caesar, made by David Bradley in Chicago in 1950, starring a little-known television actor by the name of Charlton Heston.
Oh, little known.
So, one to look up. And the other is actually a film recommendation of the Royal Shakespeare Company production. There's like a long series of how to read and act Shakespeare, and it's an amazingly good way to get into it. And my last thing, though, however, is a little bit, much as I love Shakespeare, a little devil's advocate of, you didn't really say why people are choosing not to teach it, and I don't know that it's just the language, and if it's not also some of the sexism, anti-Semitism, and racism. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of cultural context you have to teach when you teach Shakespeare.
True.
So those are my thoughts, and I'm going to take your comments off the air.
Great. Thank you, Anne. The story I was referring to earlier actually was an op-ed in the Washington Post. There was a teacher in Southern California who has said that she doesn't want to teach Shakespeare anymore because she doesn't like reading it, and she doesn't think that it includes enough cultural diversity. That could be a whole other show, a whole other hour. But she says, quote, "What I worry about is that as long as we continue to cling to one white man's view of life as he lived it so long ago, we perhaps unwittingly promote the notion that other cultural perspectives are less important."
The great thing about Shakespeare today is that many other people of many other cultures are teaching it through their lenses. The big trend now is to have all female productions, and that really changes the message, especially when, you know, I saw that all female version of Taming of the Shrew last summer, and it really made you think in a different way about that play.
Well, and I'd also add that they have done a production of Julius Caesar that was set in Africa, and it used traditional, like, African tribes to show the conflict and the struggle for power. So it's, I would say, when you say that Shakespeare isn't relevant, then I would say Shakespeare has to be relevant because Shakespeare is kind of like the tree from which all literature is born.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, do you have any thoughts on that? Did you feel like you weren't exposed to enough cultural diversity by reading these plays?
Well, with you said the relevance of Shakespeare and how it ties into people wanting or not wanting to teach it. We've kind of talked about this earlier, but there's so many ways to expose your students to this. Like, I remember watching the 90s Leonardo DiCaprio version of Romeo and Juliet that is so out there. It's just, you can't help but get into it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that cannot be overlooked if we want to get people still mm-hmm. interested in reading Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot more to talk about with Shakespeare. We'll have to do another panel. So we'll invite you all back for part two of this conversation. Diana Louise Carter, producer for Walbird Theater Company. Evie Fanning, local high school teacher. Jacob Baller, congratulations, just graduated from Webster Thomas. And Sheila Byrne, English teacher at Webster Thomas High School. Thank you all for coming in. Stay with us. More Connections is next.